Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Welcome to Investing Simplified. This is your opportunity to pick up the phone, give us a call, ask that question that's been keeping you up at night. Again, the numbers are 503-417-9595 or toll-free 877-733-1011. Well, this is a great morning because I have in studio with me Carl Jepson with the Carl Jepson Attorney at Law.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, and Kevin is taking you with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Hello, gentlemen.
Yep, absolutely. Well, listen, this is a live show, so pick up the phone, give us a call. We're doing this show to answer your questions, so don't miss the opportunity to do so. You know, I got to talk to you about the market, because the market has been pretty volatile, and anybody who's following the stock market knows that this market has been going up and down, up and down. And I'm giving you the close of the market as of the 22nd here, so have to do that. We have a little thing in the studio here, so I'll just let you know that we're having a good time here and laughing. That's and right. And talking. But
we're so confused.
So confused. It's a very confusing time. Anyway, I do want to talk to you about the market, because we've had a pretty good upswing in the market. However, up until yesterday, there was 8 consecutive days of down market. Now, that's pretty unusual, been unusual since Trump took over, quite honestly. But the fact is, the Dow Jones closed on 622 at 24,580, and it was up 119 points. But where does the Dow stand when we turn the century back to 1231.99? Well, the Dow is up 6.51% per year. Very important to understand that. The S&P, on the other hand, if I can find all my paperwork, S&P closed on 622.18 at 2,754.88. The S&P, if you go back to the turn of the century, is up 5.01% per year. Now, folks, if you're an investor and you invest in the stock market, historically the S&P outperforms the Dow long-term by a substantial amount of money. However, this decade is different. Why is that? Good question, huh?
Good question.
Yeah. How about the NASDAQ? You'd think the NASDAQ is the most risky. It would have the higher return, right? Well, wrong again. The NASDAQ over that same period of time is up 5.09% per year. Why do I mention this? Because we have an upside-down economy. If you're not watching the market and you're not being aware of what's going on in the market, you can get burned, because, quite honestly, the conservative portfolios are outperforming the aggressive portfolios. So all I'm saying is, if you're aware of that, you beware, and you should be talking to your advisor about it, because we are not in a normal economy. This is not the norm. The good news is the economy is growing. We have record low unemployment, record low unemployment in a lot of sectors, and the best employment in over 40 years in America. And if that doesn't make every American who's looking at retirement or who's in retirement happy, then you're looking at the wrong stuff, because you should be happy about that. You want the economy roll. But I'll tell you, if you're not actively meeting with your advisor, and I'm going to tell this to everybody out there, I have a little stick on there on my website that I call the financial doctor. And the reason I use the financial doctor, I'm not a doctor, don't have any special degree to be a doctor, but I use that to encourage people who are listening to our show or looking at our advertisements or anything else, that just like when you hit 50 years old, you should be doing an annual checkup on your investments. You should be doing an annual checkup with your doctor as well. Folks, good health, good wealth all go together, and you got to do an annual checkup. And you know, us guys are terrible at it. Women are way better at doing this than the men. But I got to tell you, if you're not doing an annual checkup on your investments, if you're not doing an annual checkup on your physical abilities, you need to do so. And that's why we do the financial doctor stick, because we're saying, hey, just like physical health, your financial health, you've got to look at it every single year, see where you're at, take an accounting, and go forth and take the recommendations of your doctor, of course, and take the recommendations of your financial advisor. They're giving you stuff. You know, we like to talk about things that happen during the week in our practice. And I got to tell you, this past week, I've had a lot of people come in. But before I get to that, we've got James on the line here, who is calling in from Vancouver. James, are you there? Well, maybe not. Okay, he's not there. Okay. Anyway, if you do have a question, hey, pick up the phone and call. I mean, I could talk for an hour here, so just pick up the phone and give us a call. But here's the thing. If you're not actively engaged in looking at your portfolio and taking care of things, then things will slide and get behind. And we are in a fast-changing world. It's not going to get any slower. It's going to get faster. The faster it goes, the more you've got to stay up. You know, people forget, the fastest-growing segment in America of people getting on the computer is, what do you guys think?
Seniors.
Seniors, yeah, seniors. Seniors are getting on the computer. And for that reason, people today that come in to see me are way more savvy. Like I was going to say about this week, I had several people come in, and those of you that listen to the show know that I personally do not like individuals to own stock in their retirement plan. And the reason I don't is the single biggest reason for investing in stock should be, you think you're going to hit a home run, but you don't always. Sometimes you strike out. But Kevin, the advantages of buying individual stock are better than any other form of investment, because you get capital gains if you hit a home run. If you strike out, you get to write it off, right?
You do. You get the capital loss.
Yeah, you get the capital loss. But if it's in your retirement plan, that all goes away, right?
That's right. And your gains when you pull them out are taxed at ordinary income.
Yeah, which is generally higher.
Yep.
Now, we have dodged a bullet because of AMT has gone the way of the dodo bird, thank God. But the fact is, it's still a distinct advantage to take capital gains versus ordinary income. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm.
So I was meeting with a guy the other day. He's got a ton of stock in his 401k and his IRA. He no longer works for a company. Has a bunch of money in an IRA. The majority of it is stock. He's over 70 and a half. He's been taking RMDs. And what his advisor's been doing is cashing out the stock, having him take his RMD, and then put the money over here and invest the money. And I said, wait a minute. He's got some stock that's paying 4% dividend. He's got a nice big capital gain, and I won't mention the stock name, but I pulled up information on it, and I would certainly recommend he keep the stock. So here's a novel idea, and if your broker isn't doing this, they're not doing it because they don't make any money, and I don't make any money doing this, but it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. If you have a really good stock in your 401k or your IRA, let's forget 401k, but your IRA, and you've got to take an RMD, what I do is I have my clients take the RMD in kind. So let's say this gentleman had to take a $20,000 RMD for the year. He's got a substantial IRA. Got to take a $20,000. He's got money sitting in the bank earning 20 basis points in a savings account. After taxes, Kevin, what's he netting? Not very much. So he said, look, why don't this stock is a really good stock. Wouldn't it be cool to leave that to your grandkids or your kids? He said, yeah, that'd be great because they don't know how to invest anyhow. And I said, well, let's help them. Let's take $20,000 of stock. Let's pull it out. And then you take the money out of savings and pay the tax on that RMD, which worked out to about 20%. Well, we just took $20,000 of stock producing a 4% dividend, right? Now, did I make any money? No. Did the client make any money? Oh, you bet he did. Down the road, he absolutely did. Kevin, what do you think of that idea?
That's pretty cutting edge.
Yeah. And I can tell you, we've been doing this for years, and I have mentioned this on the show before. In fact, one of our callers who calls in from Vancouver, I actually talked to him about this, I think about 5-6 years ago. And he was starting to do that on his stock portfolio. He had a great stock portfolio. And the reason I mention all this, I got an email this week from one of our listeners and said, I'm ready to take my RMD, and I have a whole bunch of stock, and my broker's telling me I need to start cashing out my stock and taking my RMDs. Well, I told him to call in and ask the question, but since he hasn't, I'll answer it. I wouldn't do that. If those are good, now, here's the caveat. If they're good stocks, why would you sell them? Why would you get rid of them? I mean, if the broker sold them to you in the first place, did you hit that stock price where you're going to sell them? Were you doing trading? Or were you buying that stock to hold? Two kinds of stock buyers. One is the stock jock that's buying to sell at a predetermined time or to get out if it drops too low. That's a trader. The other one is to buy stock. Most of my clients who own individual stock, it's because they own the stock to keep for a long, long time. I have several nurses and doctors who work in some of the facilities around here, and some of them have had a really good 401k, 403b, TSAs, deferred comp. They got a lot of retirement money, but on the having money outside of their retirement plan has been a problem. And so I've taken some of them, and even though I don't get paid on it, having them buy stock. A good example is one of my clients who retired here not too long ago. Years ago, she said, you know, I'd kind of like to get into something outside the... So we had her buy Starbucks. Starbucks may be up and down at times, but I got to tell you, over the last 10 years, take a look at the stock chart. That's been a pretty good investment. The nice thing is, she's got an advantage capital gain. It's not ordinary income. So all I'm saying is, if you have a retirement plan, before you cash out your good stock in your RMD, give me a call. I'll show you how to do it. I'll help you do it. We don't get paid to do it, but I can show you how to do it, and it's very easy. And believe me, down the road, it's going to save money to your heirs. And if you're like most of us, the reason you save money, built money originally, is for you to retire on. Once you get out there to close to retirement, it's not so much what you're going to retire on as much as it is you want to leave to your heirs. You want to leave to your children or grandchildren. You know?
Well, absolutely. You know, and one of the things that just crossed my mind is, of course, that you've got this good stock out there, which is stock, but it's not, you know, it's not in the 401k anymore, not in the IRA. And so if they pass away, that stock goes to their heirs, but their heirs get a step up in basis.
Absolutely.
And so they
beats the heck out of an IRA, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. I mean, and there's no tax on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, unless they hold it for another few years or whatever, but immediately no tax.
Well, with that, I'm going to tell you, if you've got a question, pick up the phone, give us a call. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Financial Group Wealth Management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so that clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsenlaw.com.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney, with Carl's Comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll-free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen.
Good day, folks. I have a question for you. I have a living trust. What do I do if my spouse dies?
Change it.
Ah. There we go. Well, the first thing you do is slow down. This is important. This happens a lot. People have a living trust, and somebody dies, spouse, and they run around and do all sorts of stuff, and they feel like they got to get it done yesterday. Well, number one, you can't usually do much of anything until you get a death certificate, so you kind of have to wait a few days for that. But even after that, a lot of times it's really good just to sit on stuff. Don't spend money that you don't have to. Pay your expenses out of one account, not three. Just chill on that stuff.
You know, Carl, you're exactly right. This is something you and I have talked to for the last 25 years and working together and on living trust and stuff. The biggest mistake widows and widowers make is rushing to do things. You need to set back. We recommend taking at least 6 months to a year before you make any financial decision. It's not a good time to do things under stress.
Absolutely. I mean, there are things that some are probably less harmful than others. But, you know, if you go in and start changing the accounts, say, for example, you want to take your spouse's name off the account. Why is that such a big deal? I don't know. So anyway, and I understand, and I'll answer that question in just a little minute, but I understand that we have a caller on the line.
Yeah, Kathy's got a question right about what you're talking about. Kathy's calling in asking about estate money and taxes, so she called the right place. Kathy, are you there?
I am. Thank you for taking my call. I'm wondering, we have all of our investments with beneficiaries on them, and I'm wondering when I die, who pays the taxes? Does the estate pay the tax, or does the actual beneficiary pay the tax?
I didn't quite understand. You said that you have assets with bank issues. I must have misheard.
Beneficiary.
They're beneficiary designations. Oh, okay.
Beneficiary designations on all of our investments.
Well, okay, this is an interesting problem, and I'll tell you why. Because if you have... assuming that you have enough in that situation that it has to go, you know, that it's more than $1 million. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so it's more than $1 million. So the likelihood is there's going to be some estate tax.
Yes.
Oregon estate tax. And now depending on what you're, especially with the beneficiary designation, because it's really hard to make those kind of become untaxable. Now, if it all goes to the spouse... Okay?
No.
Okay. Anything that goes to the spouse generally, not always, but generally, is tax-free.
Well, it's okay. Taxed but, the second
but,
death.
But when it goes to the other people and you're over $1 million, then there are several ways of doing that. Some people, you can put in your will or a trust, you can put a direction as to how you want to allocate or how you want to pay the estate taxes. And a lot of times they say, the most common thing is they say it's paid out of the residuary. Well, that doesn't work because the beneficiary designated assets never go into the residuary. They are individual gifts.
Mm-hmm. Well, Carl, let me just add one other thing too for Kathy. Kathy, here's the thing: you got to differentiate on some of the assets because money you have in a qualified plan, plans that are tax sheltered, your beneficiary is responsible to pay the income taxes when they cash that retirement plan out, and they have to pay the taxes on the retirement plan. Same thing is true if you have like a deferred annuity. Those are deferred taxes, so whoever inherits that money is going to pay the income tax. Unfortunately, it's also included in the estate, like Carl was mentioning, and so those have estate taxes and income taxes. The other biggest mistake Carl and I run into all the time, and we straighten it out. In fact, I just sent Carl an email on one yesterday that I met with a guy, has a substantial estate, and he owns life insurance. And that life insurance is owned by him, so upon death, the death benefit is included in his estate. So he's well over $2 million, and so his heirs are going to pay not income tax on the life insurance, but they're going to pay estate tax on the death benefit. And of course, what Carl and I are going to do is Carl's going to send him up an islet, and we're going to move it into an irrevocable trust and move that insurance policy out of the estate. And get it estate tax-free and income tax-free,
absolutely.
Right, Carl?
Absolutely.
Real quick, did I hear you say pay income tax on the life insurance?
No.
Estate tax.
Okay, good.
Life insurance is always tax-free. But if it's in the estate and owned by the person who dies, and it's not in an irrevocable trust, the death benefit's also included in the estate tax.
Let me get back to your question, which was, who has to pay the tax? And a lot of times, generally, people have documents that say it comes out of the residue. You can also say, okay, then I want it to be apportioned. I want it to be taken out of these assets, but not those. But a lot of times, it just gets apportioned, they call it. If you just do nothing, then it gets apportioned to the assets that are attributable, you know, to the estate tax. So if your estate tax is, $100,000, and your percentage of the value of the estate, whether it's beneficiary designated or otherwise, is say 10%. Well, then you're going to pay 10% of the taxes, in addition to whatever else you'd get on an IRA kind of thing. If they're just like a beneficiary designated stock account, well then there's no income tax at that point, but there would be there would be the estate tax, and it would be based on the value of the date of death. And they would look at the value of the whole estate. They'd figure out how much the tax is, and then Kevin would file a return, and hopefully he could, you know, work some magic and get it down a little bit. But the end of the day is you end up paying the tax. And the problem with that, and this is here, one, even though using a beneficiary designation is a great tool, one of the problems is if you've got this estate tax and you've got a bunch of money in one place and you don't have it set up so it's going to get apportioned, then that means it comes out of the residue, and that may not be what you want, because the residue, most people give the residue to their most preferred heir, and sometimes they end up on the short end of the stick because they end up having to pay it. If you say the estate tax, sometimes you'll see it's paid as an expense of the of the estate, but that means it's got to come out of all of it. And the problem is that those other things aren't in the estate. You know, the beneficiary designated stuff aren't technically in the estate. So it's a complicated problem. But the practical matter is, the people who get the money can be taxed on it. The problem is, if you're the personal representative or the trustee, or there's nobody around, who's going to go get it? I'll bet you dollars to donuts that there are a whole bunch of people who have had almost entirely beneficiary designated assets, over $1 million. Nobody does anything, I ask myself, so how does the Department of Revenue know that? Well, I don't know how they know that, but I mean, they don't. I don't think they track down everybody on a. You know, I wouldn't suggest this as a course of action. I mean, I would never do it either. I mean, you know, you can't say, oh, well, maybe they won't find out. But nonetheless, they could get taxed on an apportioned basis, or, and again, it would depend on the documents that were signed regarding the estate. Who might else be the person paying that tax? It could be the residue, it could be the estate, depending on how you've got it structured. That make it? Did that answer your question?
Oh, boy. No, it's too complicated, and I'm sorry that I asked that question.
It's really not that bad. We could sit down and give you some examples. It's difficult to do, you know, over the phone, but we could sit down and kind of look at the stuff that you have and say, okay, well, here's where it might turn out.
Well, the smart thing, Kathy, on your point is that you realize you have a complicated situation that needs to get resolved. So you need to sit down with somebody like Carl, estate planning attorney, and get that set up now while you're still healthy and everything's fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you for all of this information. And if I understood correctly, I would pay estate tax even on the investments that have beneficiaries on them.
Yep, the estate will pay tax on the total value of the estate, regardless of beneficiary designation.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you. Carl, that's just a great example, because a lot of people think because there's a beneficiary, it goes to the beneficiary, and it's out of their estate, and that's not the case at all.
Yeah, and it's like life insurance. Life insurance called, tax-free, but it's income tax free, but it's not tax free quite. So it seems logically, it just doesn't seem to feel quite right. But you know, it is, I guess, or it's correct anyway. So anyway, I guess I'm going to go forward with the end of my little story here. So the first thing I said was to slow down, and then what I suggest you do is you've got this living trust. The next thing I think I would do is to just kind of take it easy, and I think it would be good to sit down and read the trust, read it carefully. And what I would ask you to look at is to see if there are provisions in that trust that suggest that it should be split into other trusts, into two or more trusts when your spouse dies, because this is something that needs to be taken care of probably within at least a year, or maybe 9 months, depending on what your documents say. And what you'd look for words like AB trust, like Q-tip, just like it sounds, Q-tip, disclaimer, marital trust, survivor's trust, decedent's trust, or credit shelter trust. You find those kind of words in there, you're pretty much sure that you've got one of those kinds of trusts. That means you're going to have to do some stuff. And so, but you don't have to run out and do it. Then after that, what I'd do is do an inventory of the assets, basically a basic inventory, not necessarily, you know, every knife in the drawer, but you know, the big assets, real estate and financial accounts and things like that. And, you know, 401ks, life insurance, all of those things. And to get an estimate of what your estate was. And then if it's under $1 million, you can breathe a sigh of relief and you don't have to worry about the estate tax part of it. And you probably don't have to worry about the split trust part. If it's over $1 million, then you got some work to do. So that's kind of the next step. But you can still slow down a little bit, especially if it's under $2 million. You can kind of take a breather a little bit. Or $1 million, rather, pardon me. Then if it turns out that it looks like you've got to go to the split trust kind of thing, which you'll kind of figure out by reading through that, what you need to do is go to your lawyer, because that's really important. But also, I forgot one thing. You should, when you're doing that inventory and you're looking in there for the property, if it happens to have, you know, I told you can still slow down and don't worry about that too much. Well, if it happens to have a 1967 Shelby Cobra in the inventory, you got to run to your lawyer, because you know the rule. The rule is the Cobra always goes to the lawyer.
Well, with that being said, I do want to say this. We believe that knowledge is power. And I'm giving away 4 free books. You don't have to set an appointment. You don't have to do anything. You stop by my office, and we'll give you a copy of the book. First of all, we're giving away Your Retirement Made Simple, which is my best-selling book. On Amazon, and we'll give you one free. I also have Investing Simplified, my original book. You can give it free. I've got the top 10 IRA mistakes, and that's by David Royer, who's one of the top IRA qualified plan advisors in America. And the other one is the Peace of Mind Planning by Rocky DeFrancisco, attorney at law. So I'll give those books away free. You don't, no obligation. You don't have to schedule an appointment, because my only request is that if you pick up the book, read it. And after you read it, give it to somebody else, because if you do, they'll become knowledgeable. With that, 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon. And that's where you can pick it up at my office, or you can call us on the phone. We're going to take a quick break and come back with the tax investigator. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. We welcome your calls, 503-417-9595 or 877-733-1011 if you're outside of the area. And, you know, Carl, your topics bring up a good point that I was thinking about with these new tax law changes and the way the landscape is right now. At the federal level, we're talking income taxes now. The new changes simplified things pretty nicely for a lot of people. The new standard deduction is higher. You may not be itemizing. In fact, a lot of people are not going to be itemizing, especially in states outside of Oregon that don't have income taxes and stuff. It really did simplify some things. But for Oregon, Oregon is exactly the same as before, and you're still having to itemize deductions. And the same thing on the estate level. Federal level is now $11 million before you have to file an estate tax, but Oregon is still $1 million, so you still have a filing requirement.
Well, it looks like, Kevin, we got a caller on the line. Darlene's got a question about, or Jenny, I guess it is, has got a question about Social Security and investment question. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and your question?
Okay, two or three, 4 weeks ago, you touched on this, and I just wanted to clarify. I have a grandson that was recently put on Social Security disability, and he did receive a lump sum. It wasn't terribly big lump sum. I can't tell you exactly what. And from the conversation of yours before, I understood that the attorney fees were added to the lump sum that he got, and he would owe tax on that. And then in my thinking with Social Security, he would not owe tax on the lump sum, so to speak, but that little bit of the attorney fees he would. Am I correct?
Basically, yes. If for example, you go back and, you know, he were to get, say, $20,000 or $30,000 for all the back Social Security, he'll get a 1099 from Social Security showing that amount. But attorney fees will be listed on there, and those are depending if they pay the attorney fees. A lot of times they do. But the attorney fees do get to be a deduction off of that in a certain spot. So you'd want to make sure it's filed correctly. But the key issue was how you report that lump sum and whether you decide to take it all in 1 year and $20,000 probably is not going to generate, if that's his only income, that's not going to generate probably any income taxes. But if it were $70,000, he'd probably want to spread that over the years.
It should not be this case. In fact, if I understand Social Security, it has to actually go over $25,000 in a year for you to owe tax.
That's right. Yeah. So if it's under that amount and that's your only income, you're pretty well good not even to file a return.
Okay, I understood it correctly.
Yes, good.
Yeah, all right. My other question, which very seldom, if any, have I heard you talk about, is investments in gold and silver. What do you think of that?
I personally like silver. I do not like gold. I think silver for a long-term investment is an excellent investment. I have personally some gold coins, which I am putting away for my grandkids, telling them not to cash them out till about 2050, because I think gold's going to get tagged in a severe down market, because I think we're going to have one. Can't tell you when, but I know we're going to have one. And I think gold's going to go down, but then I think gold by about 2050 is going to be an awful high price. So that's kind of my picture on those two. I think silver's a good investment if you're inclined to do that. Silver is used so much in manufacturing and photography and all kinds of things. I just see silver as a growing asset. I don't see that for gold.
Yeah, that's what I kind of hear, especially California's new rule or law, you want to call it, on the those things you put on the roof.
Oh, solar panels?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yep. That's what they're advertising. You know, because of that, silver is going to go up.
Well, I think long range, I think silver is a great investment long term. Absolutely.
Okay. How about as an IRA?
I don't like it. And the reason I don't, if you're buying it in an IRA as a stock, say a stock that does silver, I don't mind that because we can always transfer it over like we were talking about. But if you're actually talking about buying silver or gold in an IRA, here's the problem. When you get out there to 70 and a half and you have to take an RMD, you better find a buyer for your silver and gold, because if you can't buy a buyer, you're going to have to take it down to a pawn shop, sell it to them, and pay the tax on whatever you get out of it, and that's going to have to take care of your RMD, required minimum distribution. So I don't like putting myself in a box when I retire. I want to have flexibility and be able to take money out of the least best investment I have, but not to be taking it out of one investment and have to sell that investment. That's the same thing Carl and I have talked about. Property in a retirement account. It sounds great. It sounds wonderful. The problem is when you get 70 and a half and it's all in real estate, how do you sell 1/15th of a building?
Right, right.
Or how do you sell 1/15th of a gold bar? You can't do it. Mm-hmm. So you kind of put yourself in a problem down the road. And I think that's not the right thing to do. If you want to have a little bit of it, maybe 20%, 30% of your retirement account and those kind of things, I have no problem in that. If you're an astute buyer and you've done well at it, go for it. But don't put the whole thing in there, because that is a disaster waiting to happen.
Okay. That answers that. So okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, we've had this conversation here before. You know, Kevin, one of the things she did bring up that I think we really need to do for a show, and I've had so many people send me notes on it, I've been meaning to get together with you, but we're both pretty busy, is on Medicare and retirement, and how if you make too much money, your Medicare payments go up.
That is true.
Yeah. And I think we need to do a show on that for our listeners out there, because most of our clients are retired, and that affects a lot of people.
And it kind of is a small consideration in determining when you're going to, say, harvest a your golden apple, if you will, you're selling a big building. Are you going to take it on installment sale? You know, you got to consider if you're stretching out the income on something that you're reporting over 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and it's a large amount of income, it's going to crank those Medicare payments considerably up. And it's not the total picture, but it is a consideration.
It's certainly something you have to consider.
Yeah, as opposed to the lump sum up front.
Well, here's another question. You seem to get the lines open up here, Kevin, when
you
talk. And when I'm not going to say that. I was going to say when Kevin talks, people listen. But E.F. Hutton wasn't too successful at that, so I don't want to say that. We got a caller from, this is great. We got a caller from Longview. And he's got a question about a TSP loan. Are you there, Roland?
Yes, I am here.
Okay. And your question?
I took a loan. Right now it's $24,000. If I stop paying for the loan, I was told that it's going to be considered as an income I have added to this year's income tax. What other penalties do I go that I'll be penalized?
Well, how old are you, Roland?
53.
Okay, and you're still in the TSP plan. You're still working, where you still can contribute to the TSP plan.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, my understanding, the only time that loan's going to become taxable if you break service and you have to get out of the TSP plan, then that becomes a taxable event. You have to pay that off before you take the money out of the TSP plan, or it's going to be a taxable event, right, Kevin?
Yeah, although he indicated, and this is a good question, that if he stops making the payments back on that, do they consider those non-payments as income? As if, you know, and that could be, I don't know on that, specifically on those plans. I just get the 1099s and deal with them after the fact, but that's a good question.
Yeah, normally most plans, 401k plans and TSP plan, any qualified plan that allows you to borrow money out of, you have to be doing a systematic payout or it becomes a taxable event.
Don't they withhold directly from your monthly salary?
Yes.
Okay, so
So you want to keep making those payments.
I just wonder if it's more financially for me because they're taking, you know, I could use the money now and just pay the penalty if that's more beneficial for me.
Okay, but Roland, paying a penalty, and I'm going to give you an example of what I call paying a penalty. It's like flushing money down a toilet because you're paying a penalty for nothing, something you don't have to do. I would tell you, discipline your spending better. Keep making those payments, maybe negotiate with them a smaller payment, but keep the payment going so you don't get hit with a tax liability.
All right. I'll take that advice then.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep, you bet. Thank you. You know, that's the good thing about our show, I think. People can call and ask those kind of questions and maybe save some money, because if you pay that penalty, it's going nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's like flushing money down a toilet. I just hate penalties.
Yeah. And I believe if you, on a qualified plan loan, if that becomes taxable because you've broken service or stopped payments, I believe that is subject to the 10% penalty in addition.
Yeah, that's why I asked his age. Yeah,
right,
it is.
If he's under 59 and a half. So that would be probably costly, very costly income tax-wise.
And even though he's up in Longview, you still got federal tax and that probably would put him close to a 22 to 32% bracket.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break, and I do have one thing to talk about regarding Social Security and cost of living adjustments.
Well, and I got something to add to Social Security myself, so we're going to talk. And by the way, for all you people out there who get our newsletter, sign up for our newsletter, because this week, again, the national debt went down.
What?
Went down. We're going to talk about it. We'll be right back.
We do Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work. Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified, and let's get right into it on Social Security. So, Chuck, a recent report has come out from the Senior Citizens League, an advocacy group out of Virginia. And Carl, I know you've worked with elderly advocacy mm-hmm. groups in the past, some nonprofits. That's mainly where a lot of our work centers around. They put out a report about the buying power of your monthly benefits since 2000. How, you know, if you got a dollar of Social Security, what could you buy that's typical to an elderly person? Because, or 65 and over, I should say. And just one side note, generally, most folks 65 and older, about a third of your income is from Social Security. That's kind of just the national average. You can kind of see where you fit. Some people get more. It comprises more of their annual income. Some people less, especially if you're on PERS, it's quite a bit less, but we'll leave that to another day. So how has the cost of living adjustments that Social Security has made since the year 2000, and unfortunately, I think you know the answer to this, where Social Security has made inflation-related cost of living adjustments each year that have totaled about 46% growth from the year 2000. Unfortunately, the things that you spend money on as a retired person have gone up almost 100%.
Well, and to kind of give it a double whammy here, when Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich were manipulating the national budget and taking money out of the Social Security fund to balance the budget, which means they didn't really balance it, but most people believe they did. So if you believe something you're told over and over again, I guess it becomes the truth, even though it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So back to reality, they changed Clinton and Gingrich, a Democrat and Republican, so equal opportunity here. They changed the way you figure inflation. What they really did was they said, uh-oh, we got a time bomb. It's called social insecurity. Mm-hmm. And this thing's going to blow up in our face. We don't want it to blow up while we're still alive so somebody else can get the blame. So we're going to recalculate the way you do inflation. And that's why the raises have not been very, very good for retired people. And all you retired seniors who fall in the bow down line and listen to these politicians who tell you they're taking care of you, yeah, they're taking care of you with their pocketbook. In their pocketbook, not yours.
That's exactly right. Yep. And here's the sneaky thing, too. Not only have they recalculated that, they're basing the COLA, the COLAs on the Consumer Price Index for urban wage earners and clerical workers. Why don't they use, as this advocacy group says, the Consumer Price Index for the elderly?
Yeah.
Here's some examples. Medicare Part B in 2000, $45 a month. Currently, $134 a month. Prescription drugs averaged $1,100 out of pocket. Now averages $3,200 out of pocket. Real estate taxes, $700. Back in 2000, almost $1,600. So these are significant increases, and even things like home heating oil, $1.15 a gallon back then, $3.22 now. So those are some pretty significant.
Well, You know, social insecurity is always a upsetting thing to me because seniors have been kind of duped on this whole thing. And here's the reality. Good news. On Monday, I was working out, watching the financial news, and a report came out. But interestingly, I haven't heard it on any of the networks. But Kevin, did you know that Social Security disability, and a lady called in about it today for her son, and thank goodness for her, she got the benefit for him. But did you know that Social Security had predicted that by 2023, the fund for Social Security disability would be kaput? The general fund for the checks you folks are getting by 2034 on the current level is going to be reduced by down to 70% of what you're now getting. If you don't read your Social Security statement, folks, the government's been telling you for years they're going to reduce it. Do you really think they're not going to reduce it? They've been telling you for years they're going to reduce it. But here's the good news. Because of the economy, because of what's going on, and that's why the news people aren't saying this, because of the economy, the Social Security fund now, listen to this, got to have a little drum roll, is now good, not to 2023, but it now is okay till 2034. And do you know why? Disability claims have plummeted because people suddenly found out that that disability they had and getting money from Social Security wasn't very much money. They could actually go out and get a job and make more money than they're getting on disability. So guess what? Their disability went away. Oh my gosh, go figure, huh?
That's right, and they caught those crooks out of New York that they had a method to put people on get their disability at age 50, and lo and behold, they were finding them out on fishing trips catching marlins in Florida.
You know, to me, those people should go to a very dark hole in jail and not be let out because they're taking advantage of the people who can't really help themselves, and that's the disabled. And those people are the scum of the earth, as far as I'm concerned, when they cheat on people like that, and they take the money from the people that really need it.
I have a plan where when I turn 80, I think I'm going to get this really nice sign, you know, cardboard sign, and I'm going to go out to one of the nearest freeways, and I'm going to be in my best three-piece suit, whatever's left of it, and I'm going to get up there, and it's going to say, "Broke lawyer will sue for food." What do you think?
You'll be in business.
I think if things don't change in that area, you may have a lot of company.
Yeah, but, you know,
you may be having to fight people for that corner.
Well, I know. I'll have to get a restraining order against them. Get my corner back, you know? Yeah.
Your sign will actually read, "Need gas for my 67 Cobra."
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a lot of gas.
Well, listen, I got a couple of announcements to make. Number one, I mentioned about the four books. Those four books, no obligation. You don't set an appointment. Just stop by the office, pick them up. We'll give them to you. They're yours for free. Just as long as you read them, and after you read them, give them to somebody else that needs to be educated, because education is the real key to successful investing. It really is, knowing what you're doing. Kevin, how somebody get a hold of you if they need to get a hold of you?
We are at baker-colson.com. Our phone number is 503-666-5569.
And Carl?
Carl Jepson at law. Attorney at law. 971-229-0585. And I'm at carljepsonlaw.com.
Okay. And listen, I'm at Price Financial Group Wealth Management, pfgwm.com on the web. Phone number 503-253-3000 or toll free 877-50-PRICE. And here's what I would tell you. If you're up at night and you want to look at a website, go to my website, pfgwm.com. I have a whole bunch more of seminars on demand where you can sit in your living room at night, no advisor, you know, trying to close you or anything, and you can help do some of your own retirement planning right on our website. So don't miss that opportunity. Everybody have a great week. We'll be back next week with Investing Simplified. If you got questions, send us a question to AskChuck at pfgwm.com, and we will answer your question on the air. Have a great week.
Price Financial Group.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Investing Simplified.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000.